So hello from my side. I'm very delighted to present to you a paper that I've co-authored with Lukas Obernauer and Zoltan Novotny-Farkas. In this paper, hence the name, we try to make sense of IFRS 17, actually the first truly IFRS for insurance contracts that took more than a decade to develop and went live in 2023, representing a significant change in how insurance report their financials. First, I'd like to briefly outline the context that makes this transition so significant. Okay. So basically, insurance function by assuming risk in exchange of premiums, which they invest primarily in financial assets such as equities, bonds, and loans. And in doing so, they try to match investment returns with the future claim payments to policyholders, which actually represent their main and largest liabilities, hence insurance, namely insurance contract liabilities. And these business models makes them their investments, also their main assets and their insurance liabilities, in natural offsets within their balance sheet. They're also exposed to both insurance-specific risk that affects their future expected claim payments, such as mortality, longevity, and this risk is sometimes very hard to assess and predict. But they're also exposed to investment-related risk because of their exposure to financial markets, such as interest rates. And interest rates not only affect the investment side, but it also affects insurance contract liabilities. Because first, through discounting, they affect the present value, but not only that, because most insurance contract assets, and especially life insurance contract assets, can contain features such as, for example, a guaranteed return that oblige the insurance to pay the policyholder a minimum return regardless of the market conditions, making their obligation highly sensitive to the interest rates. Before IFRS 17, insurance prior reporting practices failed to reflect these underlying economics properly in financial statements. And this was mainly due to IFRS 4, which was an interim standard, and allowed insurers to even continue national GAAP even within the IFRS. And this led to a variety of practices. Insurance would, for example, record revenue when they received premiums upfront on a cash basis, despite the coverage being delivered over time. But not only that, also their main insurance liabilities were often measured at historical cost, using locked-in assumptions, locked-in interest rate, fixed contract inception, sometimes undiscounted. And remember, we're talking here about insurance contracts that can span multiple years. So life insurance contracts can span decades, and having those shown and locked in interest rates and locked in assumptions for several years can be problematic. And a prominent example of that is what happened to the Japanese insurance in the 2020 with large guaranteed return portfolios. And because of the prolonged low rate environment, they couldn't meet the high guaranteed promise to the insurance and went, most of them went bankrupt, suffering substantial losses, so losses that weren't timely reflected in the financial statements. And not only that, having insurance liabilities at cost, while their investment assets were long measured, most of their assets were long measured at fair value under IAS 39, resulted in accounting mismatch between insurance assets and liabilities that resulted in artificial volatility within equity that some insurance even exploited as buffers for earnings management. So, IFRS 17 is basically designed to address these issues and how it introduces a consistent current measurement model for insurance liabilities, where insurance liabilities are measured at current assumptions and discounted using current interest rates. A big innovation here is CSM, contractual service margin, a new liability component that represents unearned future profits of insurance contracts that are released over time as insurance provides services, thus aligning the revenue recognition with the service delivery and eliminating the prior practice of premature revenue recognition. IFRS 17 also requires separate presentation of insurance finance and insurance service result, better distinguishing between the two components within insurance contracts. And it allows, it has an OCI option for insurance contract liability, specifically the change that is driven by changes in interest rates, in the current interest rates. Now, an important point here is that this significant shift is closely linked with insurance, with most insurance first implementation of IFRS 9. And this is because their business model of matching investments with insurance liabilities was a key consideration of ISB in designing IFRS 9. And I have to stress out, this is a new feature that we more prominently emphasize in our current version of the paper. And it's specifically important because during the development of IFRS 9, insurance has expressed concern that having only two measurement categories as initially proposed in IFRS 9, fair value and amortized cost, would contradict the fair value through OCI option for insurance liabilities. And this led ISB to introduce a new category measurement, fair value through OCI in IFRS 9, and retain fair value option for debt instrument, despite concern that these new add-ins would add complexity and rather than transparency. But it was a key decision to avoid any potential accounting mismatches arising between the interplay of IFRS 17 and IFRS 9 for insurers. So overall, these changes aim to enhance the faithful representation of insurance financial statements. So what do? We first look at how insurers transition to IFRS 17. Their choice of transition is specifically important because it affects equity and transition, enhance equity impact, transition impact. Second, we try to quantify the transition impacts on key items of the balance sheet and income statements. In doing so, we try to disentangle the impacts of IFRS 17 from the impacts of IFRS 9. And importantly, finally, we try to assess whether the concurrent adoption of IFRS 17 and IFRS 9 addresses and delivers on the ISB expected benefit of reduced accounting mismatches between assets and liabilities. So how do we do that? We take advantage of our very unique setting. First of all, we exploit the fact that insurers have to restate comparatives in their 2023 report, the first year of implementation. So we have both restated and stated figures for the same year of 2022, transition year, allowing us to isolate the accounting effect while the fundamentals remain same. And on top of that, this is a year that experienced a major interest rate shock, an interest rate spike. ECB rates, for example, rose by 2.5%. And this gives us a natural, unique opportunity to test accounting mismatches between assets and liabilities pre- and post-transition. So now that we have their main investments and their liabilities aligned in current measurements, say, theoretically, if insurance assets and liabilities are perfectly matched, they would move concurrently with changes in interest rates, leaving equity unaffected. And this would also be reflected in the income statements, depending on how they choose to align these OCI options designed for that purpose. So in this case, any remaining impact now would indicate the real economic mismatch rather than accounting mismatch. So because of hedging imperfectness, because of different cash flow patterns on both sides, so would indicate now the real underlying risk behind insurance business. And because insurers do not always disclose a transition bridge in their transition disclosures, and sometimes not separately disclose the effects of IFRS 17 and IFRS 9. We try to construct a transition bridge by comparing stated and restated figures for the transition date, which is the 1st January 2022, the earliest date for which we have for the first time IFRS 17 figures. In doing so, we focus on mainline items impacted. For IFRS 17, we focus on insurance contract assets and insurance contract liabilities. And I should note that because the line items that represented these positions under IFRS 4 varied widely across firms and across countries, in order to compare them with the new line items now consistently named and shown on the face of the balance sheet in IFRS 17, we group and try to standardize the line items of in the stated IFRS 4 reports to match the new ones with the stated figures, with the restated figures. For IFRS 9, we focus on financial assets and liabilities, and on the performance side, we specifically look at the insurance service result, also a new line item and consistently named under IFRS 17, and compare it with its analog in IFRS 4, net written premium. So our sample consists of 42 insurance representing 93.5% of the total assets of public European IFRS insurance and S&P, speaking for the high representativeness of our sample. Important here is that to note, and interesting, that 36 of them adopted IFRS 9 simultaneously with IFRS 17, and only 6 adopted IFRS 9 earlier. So as I said, we first look at transition approaches. Basically, IFRS 17 prescribes full retrospective approach, which means that IFRS 17 should be applied as it always had been in place, but where this is impractical because of not having full history of data that it requires, it allows alternative approaches such as the modified retrospective approach, which is an approximation of the full retrospective approach but with estimates, or the fair value approach, which is basically the fair value of the contract of the contracts at the date of transition. Now, important is that these different transition approaches yield different CSM at transition, opening CSM, which in turn affects equity. So for example, the higher the CSM, the lower the equity, since it is a liability component, but the higher the profit base, the higher the future profit recognition, since it presents an earned future profit that will be released over time in the future as insurance provides service. So indicating conflicting incentives in choosing the transition approaches. What we show is that actually 73% of the CSM at transition is derived using either modified or the fair value retrospective approach, with only 27% derived under full retrospective approach. And this is especially true for life and health and multi-line insurance. While this might be justified by their longer term contracts, for which having full history of data is impossible, thus making full retrospective approach impractical, this also highlights concerns on comparability of transition impacts and points to potential discretion in the choice of transition approaches. Regarding the transition impact, we show that the concurrent adoption of IFRS 17 and IFRS 9 leads overall to a significant equity decrease at transition, with IFRS 17 alone leading to an average of a decrease of 24% in equity, driven primarily by the derecognition of deferred acquisition costs, which are now incorporated into the measurement of insurance contract and liabilities under IFRS 17, but were separately recognized under IFRS 4 mainly, and a decrease in insurance contract assets. IFRS 9 in contracts has a smaller impact, an insignificant one. However, important here is the dispersion, the high dispersion in the transition impact and the transition effects across firms, indicating the variety in transition approaches, but also the variety in prior reporting practices under IFRS 4. Looking at the performance side, we see that under IFRS 17 insurance report, a significantly lower revenue than under IFRS 4 for the same year. And this indicates that under prior practices, they recognized revenue too early. And this can be linked also with a decrease in insurance contract assets that we find. So the decrease in insurance contract assets can indicate the full retrospective elimination of this premature revenue recognition that is now packed in CSM and is going to be released in the future as insurance provides service. Now, regarding the IFRS 9, we see an overall more shift to fair value measurement, specifically to that through P&L. Looking separately at simultaneous and earlier adopters, we see that this trend is specifically true for simultaneous adopters, indicating that maybe there are also some voluntary reclassification to fair value to obey, to now align the measurement of investments with the now current measurement of insurance liabilities under IFRS 17, since we don't see such patterns for earlier adopters. And looking also across regions, we see that Nordic and Anglo-Saxon countries have a higher portion of their financial assets measured at fair value through P&L, indicating their preference for full fair value accounting, whether Central European insurance, while still experiencing a higher a fair value measurement overall, they tend to recognize fair value gains and losses in OCI, consistent with their more conservative and historical cost accounting tradition. Now to the accounting mismatches, what we do is basically we look at how equity changes, changes in equity, comprehensive income, net income, throughout the same year, and we compare these changes for the, since we have stated and restated figures, how both regimes reflect the same underlying economics of the same year. What we see is that under IFRS 4, insurance reported an equity decrease of 18.3%, a significant one, and this 18.3% decrease is translated to an only 8.2% decrease under IFRS 17. And we see that these adjustments occurs mainly through OCI, which moderates from an 80 point, from a negative 80% to an only 6% decrease under under IFRS 17. So what has happened is that during the interest rate spike, the interest rate spike hit the most of investment portfolios of insurance, resulting in losses that were mainly unrealized and packed through OCI, whereas liabilities remain unaffected because of the historical cost practices. And now, under IFRS 17, the current measurement of liabilities takes also account for this change in interest rates. So the interest rate spike decreases the present value of liabilities, resulting in offsetting gains that offset the losses on the financial assets. So overall, the impact on equity is more muted. Important here is that we see that the dispersion of OCI, as indicated by the standard deviation, is significantly lower under IFRS 17, indicating that insurance responses to the same shock of interest rate spike is now more comparable under IFRS 17. And since we don't, in this regard, we don't see such effects, for example, for net income. In fact, the standard deviation of net income increases, indicating heterogeneity in the underlying business economics, which inherently are different across across insurers. Now, overall, we think that these patterns are true for Central European and more pronounced for Central European firms, again indicating their prior cost, historical cost practices, which exacerbated more the accounting, the prior accounting mismatches, and for which the current measurement model of under IFRS 17 makes a bigger impact. And we see that this is also especially true for those insurance who align OCI option across both sides for investments and for liabilities. Those insurance also see more pronounced decrease, and that through OCI specifically. Now, I've come to the conclusion. So the main takeaways for our findings is, for example, specifically our findings on reduced accounting mismatches supports the ISB objective of achieving consistent measurement and presentation of related positions. However, since we see that while we see that this is beneficial in the insurance contracts who inherently have economically linked position, it's still an open question whether this is true for other industries since that apply, for example, IFRS 9 in isolation and that don't need this interplay. Hence the prior concerns whether these features add more complexity rather than transparency. But at least we show that OCIs can still help isolate the market-driven shocks from the shocks driven from change in the economics underlyings. And another important point is that the variation in transition approaches stresses the need to really look at the disclosure practices afterwards in order for users to be able to tell the implications that's coming from the transition approaches for specifically for post-transition outcomes, since they were associated and linked with a lot of discretion. And there it's important to know their implications for future, specifically for future reported profitability. So to saying that, to our knowledge, we are the first to have such a comprehensive empirical investigation of IFRS 17 extended prior compliance-based reports from policymakers, and more broadly, we specifically linked to the IFRS adoption literature and the literature on fair value measurement. So this was from my side. Thank you for your attention, and I'm really looking forward to the discussions.